Blog Talk Radio.
Alrighty, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, I'm Tornado, Penny Pentagon.
And we have an action packed Fighting Is Unlimited Combat Sports Show coming your way here. We have tons to talk about. As soon as Tom comes on, we'll have to pick his brain about the UFC event because, due to the timing of, I think it was UFC on FX7, I believe it was, or Fuel 7. I don't know. I can't keep track of these freaking Fox stations. But basically, they had the event over in the UK, I believe. So I had no idea it was on in the middle of the day instead of at night, like usual. So by the time I remembered, after a tough day at work on Saturday, that the UFC fights were on, they were already over. So I didn't see a one of them. I didn't even bother to go try to find the bootleg videos. Anyway, I don't get Fuel, so I wasn't able to watch any replays that night or anything. If they did, I don't know. So Tom's going to have to break that down for us whenever he gets on. But a big UFC event to preview for the weekend, of course, the debut of women's MMA. And Ronda Rousey taking on Liz Carmouche. And that should be a pretty decent fight. Of course, there was also some controversy over the press release that they had between with Tito Ortiz, Cyborg Santos. Tito Ortiz was tripping over every other word and making no sense and sounding like he never had a public speaking engagement in his life. But they announced that Cyborg's moving over to Invicta. His UFC released her, but she still has an option to come back to fight Ronda in the future. So that's, I guess, the super fight that everybody wants, but apparently not at the right weight for Cyborg there. So we'll see if that ever happens. But there's plenty of UFC news to talk about. What do we have in boxing while we're waiting for Tom to chime in here?
Well, we had the boxing card last week on HBO, which the main event was, a pretty one-sided mismatch between Adrian Broner and Gavin Reese. Almost everybody picked Reese to get destroyed. Some odds had him as an 80-1 underdog. He came out firing. He won the first two rounds, but once Broner figured him out, he dropped him in the fourth, and the corner right there wanted to stop the fight between rounds. Leave him, let him go out for another round. Then he got dropped again by a body shot, and then right after that, the corner to the talon. The jury's still out on Broner. His last three fights actually ended with the opposing corner throwing him foul. But on the other hand, you can tell the guy is unquestionably talented. Now, the problem is he overhyped? Does he believe his own press? It's almost like a combination of the primary Jones, Floyd, and Nazim Hamed. I remember Hamed coming in the carpet and making guys put into the ring for him to come out from like a fool and flipping over the ropes. Broner's always worried about his hair. When he's in there and somebody's beating him up, even the rounds he lost, you could tell he was still, not in serious trouble. I want to see what happens when he's in serious trouble and he's got to dig down a little bit deeper. I want to see if he can polish off some of that flash and show us really underneath that there's, a steel in there, some real. That will be, a question that needs to be answered.
speaking of real steel, funny you mentioned that. Have you seen these commercials with the boxing robots, Robot Combat League on Sci-Fi Channel?
I had heard about it. I never really paid attention to it.
I saw a couple of them. They were running nonstop on the networks, and Chris Jericho is hosting the wrestler. And it seems like it's the Real Steel movie come to life. Talk about art imitating life, or life imitating art. And it looks pretty impressive. I mean, it doesn't look like the robots are really truly remote control. It looks like there's some kind of an arm that's attached to their back, and then the people actually that are fighting each other with these, they're doing Real Steel, the movie. Yeah, I saw the movie's what do they call it? Trailers. I haven't actually seen the movie, but then seeing these commercials, it looks just like what the concept of that movie is. So I don't know if I have anything to worry about, going out of style because robots are going to take over. But I'm definitely going to watch. I got the Sci-Fi Channel. I don't have FX, I don't have Fuel, but I have that. So. Kind of looking forward to seeing how that turns out. They do have at least one professional MMA fighter who's going to be controlling one of the robots in one of the episodes, but I don't know much else about it. I just thought that was kind of an interesting side light there. A little bit of boxing news here. Mike Tyson is fighting again, I believe it is. But not in court.
Yeah, please elaborate.
He is suing a company that was managing his money at one point. He's been in the news a lot because he was on Law & Order. He's been in the movie The Hangover. And he's doing this one-man show on Broadway, and now actually he's doing a cross-country tour of it. Actually, he was just in the news last week. He was out again for a promotion about his barbecue sauce. And now this week, he's finally filed suit against SFX Financial Advisory Management Enterprises, which is a financial services firm owned by Live Nation. And he's charging that one of its advisors embezzled more than $300,000 from him. As well as cost. Tyson's suit claims that SFX has not given him a complete picture of the investment, and while they have returned some of the money, they have asked him to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Tyson's suit seeks more than $5 million in damages for a breach of fiduciary duty, negligent hiring, enrichment, and other charges. The quote from the lawsuit, defendants did not secure, protect, safeguard, and appropriately apply the Tyson's finances for their intended purposes, but instead misappropriated said funds for the benefit and /Live Nation. And according to Tyson, the embezzlement prevented him from getting out of bankruptcy and forced him to turn down potentially lucrative opportunities. And the advisor, Brian Alrand, probably not pronouncing that right, was a trusted wedding, and Aurang has since left the company, and the AP was unable to reach him for a response. Live Nation also did not comment because they have not been served with the lawsuit yet, at least as of press time for the minutes. Works out for. I don't know what the chance of him recovering dollars, but with big companies like that, once it gets into the press, usually they settle. So probably gonna have some more travel money pretty soon here. And here's Tom. How's it going, Psychic Tom?
I'm still flashing on the robots. You know, by coincidence, I have a friend who is into something called transhumanism, and
oh, really?
Yeah, and she was saying that, according to what these futurists predict, that by 2040, we will actually have merged with technology. You know, the old cyborgs come to life. So I'm kind of wondering how that would play out in the rear of the cage, you know. But, yeah, very fascinating topic. We'll have to check that out.
I remember watching not too long ago a program on, I think it was the History Channel, about fiber optics and stuff, where they actually are producing in the future. You're just going to have like a little window in the corner of your eye, like picture in TV. You'll be able to control that with your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do what you want. You could Google something inside your eye. On a little right eyeball. So I guess that's pretty futuristic for you.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe we're starting there now. She mentioned the South African what do they call them, the Blade Runner. She said that was an example of transhumanism. I mean, I think I'd prefer my regular feet, but you kind of get the drift here that technology is definitely changing. I don't know how far it'll go. I don't know how far it can go, or whether it should go there. Those are bigger questions, but the thing is, the genie's out of the bottle on that. So.
Yeah, so, boxers, you thought MMA was a threat to your business. Now you got to worry about fucking robots.
Cyborgs, yeah.
But anyway, Tom, I was saying probably before you were listening, but I didn't get a chance to see a single fight on this UFC card this last weekend because I was drone-eyeing. I thought it was going to be another night event this afternoon. So I missed it. So I hope you took notes.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as the main event, as I said, I'm a big fan of Michael McDonald, always have been, always will be. But I just felt he was just a little overmatched in that one. And that Mario is a beast, I'm telling you. He's going to be a threat to anyone. And the semi, Cub Swanson, well, you probably have the results, I could imagine. But, I was sort of leaning toward Poirier a bit, but I'm not shocked that Swanson pulled it off. And
He needed it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. So maybe he's bounced back pretty good from that destruction from Jose Aldo, and see where he goes.
Yeah, I'm going to look a little bit later, but, you know, they've been making country, so dropping like flies. And, you know, it's actually the first time I ever heard this. I never knew that there's written in contract that they have a right to cut you after a loss. Any loss. It doesn't have to be, it's not your three strikes, you're out rule. Now it's apparently everyone's contract that they could cut you after any loss.
Yeah, I think I noticed a story in the news part of the Underground that said something like 100 fighters may be cut. 100. I don't know how many they have on contract. Yeah, it was if you go to the Underground, and in the news thing, Dana was saying something about possibly cutting 100. How many do they have? That's my question. How many? But I just ran out of time. I wasn't able to get the whole story, but that'll be kind of interesting.
The fight card there was Jimmy Manuel. By retired I have no idea. How did that come about there? Do you remember?
Okay, yeah, you were fading out there. Say it again.
Taylor versus Cyril Diabate. It says TKO by retirement. Did he quit on his stool or something?
That one I can't remember. I don't think I seen that one.
He must have quit on a stool because it's one round, around 5 minutes. I would think that's what had to happen. This is Jorge Santiago. Win Fulton. Very well, Mr.
decision. No winning is to control the UFC there. Again, another win. That was a split decision. For real.
Nothing worth too much of a comment on.
Quick point there. All right, well, we also have Bellator coming on tonight, too, as well. I don't have the full schedule in front of me. I am really looking forward to King Mo because I watched him a few weeks ago in his Bellator debut, and he was just absolutely amazing with his punching. His boxing was second to none. And, you know, this is a guy who's also wrestling now and doing the training for mixed martial arts. So it's very impressive to me. He actually kind of threw me for a loop. I was watching that they have a special show on Spike TV about King Mo, basically, and how he was really, you know, one of their most coveted signings, and to, you know, really chronicle the way he's training for both wrestling and MMA. And he actually considers the wrestling training harder than training for MMA. And it's basically mostly because of all the slams you take. You know, it's really, really, you know, it's fake, but it really hurts when you get thrown onto that canvas with the boards underneath it there. You know, you're really taking on a lot of it on your back, your shoulders. It's a lot of contact back and forth there.
Yeah, I can imagine a lot of those guys do not have a pleasant old age.
Yeah, and there's no weight limit, so you could be getting hit by a guy twice your size.
Yeah.
So I guess I can see his point, but a lot of people would kind of be like, yeah, whatever, you know, it's all fake.
You know, and I don't think King Mo has any aspirations to get into the UFC, because another one of the headlines I noticed was he was saying Bellator is a sport, the UFC is a spectacle. But I didn't have time. I'll say this much. He says what's on his mind. You never have to know what he's thinking, feeling.
Yeah. And it turns out, actually, all the guys, pretty much about 99% of the guys, I think, that are in the wrestling circuit with him seem to think he's a great guy. You know, they really appreciate his company, and they really meshed well with him when he first came in. But first fight in Bellator, he annihilated his opponent with unbelievable body. boxing. I think it was an uppercut that finally put the guy down. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him fight on his feet again. And he just fought like 2 or 3 weeks ago. So
yeah,
I mean, it's good to show you how easy the fight was for him that they could schedule it like that.
Yeah, someone said that was like Mo slapping Curly. I can't remember what his opponent's name was. But it's like Mo slapping down Curly, you know.
Well, we're going to talk about UFC 157 here, of course. Ronda Rousey making her UFC debut in women's MMA, period, making its debut at on the UFC here, on the roster there. Liz Carmouche is 8-2 against Rousey, 6-0. And, of course, it seems logical that the winner of the other women's fight that's been scheduled for the Ultimate Fighter final there will face whoever wins this one. And I'm guessing that Ronda is an odds-on favorite. I know Misha Tate's in that other fight, but I'm drawing a blank on who she's supposed to be fighting in that one. Kat Zingano.
All fights here at UFC 157. Lyoto Machida versus Dan Henderson. And I think this one is also going to be a title shot eliminator. But I know that Machida had an opportunity to have a rematch with Jones, and he declined it because he didn't think he had enough training time or for whatever reason. Henderson got injured, so he couldn't fight Jones when he was scheduled to. So it's going to be interesting, but I would think that Henderson is going to win this one because Machida has kind of been off and on. Henderson has done really well since crossing over from Strikeforce. I really, you know, think his veteran mindset is going to take this one. He's had a lot of time off to work on his game, and hopefully none of his injury problems come back to the surface there. He should be able to handle.
Well, here's my take on it. I think that Machida was initially just a mystery. I mean, he was a puzzle because he would do things in there that no one had done. I mean, we can go back to the early UFC days when Hoyce Gracie had a style that no one had seen before. But one thing about the fight game, people are very adaptable. And I suspect some of Machida's mystery has been, some of the puzzle's been figured out. And I furthermore think that if anyone can do it, Dan Henderson's been around forever. So he's my pick.
Machida's 18-3, Henderson is 29-8. And I definitely like Henderson's chances in this one. I think that, I don't know, it's just Machida will gladly stay standing in most fights, and he'll just he'll do the timing thing. He'll wait for a shot to counter on, or you know, he'll try to do something out of the ordinary at some point. And the thing about Henderson is he'll hit you with the simple stuff. He'll get you with the 1-2 punch, and it's over. And Machida is gonna try to be crafty about it. It's not gonna have time because Henderson, I think, is gonna overwhelm him.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. You know, maybe Machida's done something differently in this training camp, getting ready for Henderson. Maybe it will be sort of an upset there. But I doubt it. And maybe Machida will be the next guy to get cut. Who knows? But also, Uriah Faber is going to be fighting on this card. He's fighting Ivan Menjivar, who's 25-9. Faber is 26-6, and I believe his last fight was a loss to Renan Barao this far. So, you know, no shame there. It was a five-rounder, brutal fight. And, Uriah Faber just didn't have enough there. Then we have a very interesting matchup between a couple bad boys of the sport, Josh Koscheck versus Robbie Lawler. And Lawler's coming, one of those guys that came over from the Strikeforce circuit there, and he's 19-9, coming against Koscheck, who's 17-6. Both guys have kind of in-your-face attitudes, and they're both very tough guys, so excited to kind of see how that one goes. And, of course, what would a UFC card be without the heavyweights? We got Brandon Schaub, 8-3, coming in against LeVar Johnson, 17-6. And, you know, if it wasn't for the Strikeforce merger or acquisition or collapse or whatever you want to call it, I think the heavyweight division would be in real trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think now that they've got some new blood in there, we're going to see some good fights. I hope Schaub is able to do some stick or not, but LeVar has way more experience, so, you know, this is just going to be one of those fights where Schaub is going to be able to prove himself or figure out that he just can't hang. There's another guy that can't keep up the fighter.
This will be interesting to see Schwab's strategy in this fight, because in the past he has shown himself susceptible to KOs, and he's fighting the wrong guy for that, with Johnson. So be interesting to see if he wants to take it to the ground or how he'll approach this.
And then we have the Ultimate Fighter Live winner, Michael Chiesa, who probably had one of the most dramatic stories of anybody ever coming into the Ultimate Fighter house with his dad dying of cancer while he was on the show. Had to go home and do the funeral thing and then come back for the show and won it. So, pretty incredible story. He's 8-0, still undefeated as an MMA fighter. He's fighting Anton Kuvanin, who is 17-5. So, a lot more experience there, but also a lot more losses. So, I don't know what Keith has been doing. He's been out of the picture for quite a while. Hasn't fought all that much since the season ended there. So I'm excited to see how he's developed with professional training and, you know, where he's ready to take it. But I would think, judging from his performance on the show, that he's going to be in the title picture eventually.
I would agree.
And then we have the dentist in action in the fifth fight on the card here. We got Court McGee, another guy from the Ultimate Fighter. He's 14-3. Fighting Josh Neer, who's 33-12-1. He's the dentist. He's a Iowa guy. Been around a long time. And he's very tough. But he's also unpredictable. You know, sometimes he comes in and does a great job. Other times he just makes some minimal mistake and boom, he gets beat. So I don't know what to expect in this.
I would hope he'd be ready for this, because, as you said, it seems like Neer's been around. I remember him from the early part of the last decade, and I know he got a start when he was young, but, I mean, I think chronologically he's maybe not that old, but some of the wars he's been through, I mean, and he's had a couple key setbacks, so this is a vital fight for him, I think, as it is for Court after his last fight. You remember that one? He came up short, so... see what happens.
One of my favorite memories of Neer, I saw him fight in person in Iowa, and was right back when it was just, we were fresh off a MySpace page. We had just become .com, you know, unlimitedfightnews.com. And I went to this fight. They flew me in and out to Iowa to see this fight. It was our big sponsor that since collapsed. The whole circuit collapsed because they had a bad show, but they had ex-UFC guys. Neer wasn't in the UFC, obviously, at the time, or else he wouldn't have been on the show, but he got caught in a guillotine choke and just picked the guy right up off the mat, walked to the other side of the cage, and then dropped him back down on the mat and popped out of it somehow. But he was in deep, and he was holding on to this guy, standing up in this deep choke, and somehow got out of it, and that really impressed me. And he won his fight, so... He got out of it and made the guy pay for it. Then we have Sam Stout, who's 18-8-1, fighting Carlos Fedor. I know Stout typically brings a lot of good boxing, but I don't know much about Fedor. I probably have seen him fight, but just nothing stands out about what to expect on his side of the fence there. We also have Dennis Bermudez, 9-3, also a tough veteran. I think Matt Grice, who's 15-4. And the last two fights, we have Kenny Robertson. He's 11-2, fighting Brock Jardine. Was 9-2. And we got Magny versus Manly. Neil Magny, 7-1, fighting John Manly, who's also 7-1. So pretty good matchmaking in there. And, of course, our guest from last week was on The Ultimate Fighter this past week, a couple nights ago, and did not do so well. Bubba is out. He got choked out. I was rooting for him. He was doing all right. He was, establishing control, but he was very sloppy, very too patient, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gave him the first round. I mean, it wasn't a complete runaway, but I thought he did a little more. Went for a few more submissions, and I think he was a little more in control. But that second round, I don't know if he was just, do you think he may have been a bit overconfident?
I think he was trying to pace himself.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to not get hurt. Because, I mean, you heard him in the first couple episodes talk about how, you know, he was depending on his strategy to get to the finals, fight certain guys, you know, go certain. And this was a very serious career thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what ended up happening was he said, well, you know, to get through the next round, I'm not going to be able to go in there and just, you know, give it all here. I have to kind of pace myself through it and make sure I don't get injured. So he was doing what he does best and basically trying to control the fight instead of take the guy out.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think that he was so concerned about the wrestling and the submissions of his own, he forgot how to defend them.
Yeah, very good point.
In the heat of the moment, when Kelvin got his back, he forgot, oh, geez, watch out for the rear naked choke. Every time for the rear naked choke when he was in that position.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
he didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, that is so 101 that it's hard to imagine someone falling for it, but I can understand how he could. If your mind's going so fast, thinking of a million things, and then boom, all of a sudden. Yeah, that was quite
a
turnaround.
Such a classic look on his face, too, when that got locked in. Like, you could see, it just looked like a deer in the headlights all of a sudden. He's like, oh, man, this is going to be it. I'm going to have to tap out.
Yeah, it's a horrible feeling. That's a bad feeling, and sometimes you just know this is in. I ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, it was a big surprise too. It was the youngest guy in the whole fighter house, and in the history of the series, to beat a guy like that with the most experience this year coming into the house. But you know, as John Jones said, you never know which Bubba you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Who shows up?
Well, like I said, I still think it was rather revealing that he was picked fourth by John, not even second. I found that fascinating. And very telling, by the way.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to get the wild card spot and come back, but, I definitely will be rooting for him. I think he's got great character. He's a good fighter, too, but it's just he doesn't have finishing skills. Is his problem. He's got all the tools, but he just doesn't have the killing tools, I guess.
Yeah, so I think he needs either a sports psychologist or, work on some head stuff, really. I mean, I think everyone needs that, but some more than others. Yeah, exactly. A lot of creative visualization, you know, that kind of stuff, mental guided imagery, everything. It sounds weird, but that stuff works.
And there was one particular point where this whole corner was screaming, elbows, elbows, elbows. And he was in the perfect position to drop right-handed elbows on Kelvin. He didn't knew it. Whether it was because he thought he had a smarter plan or he didn't hear them for some reason, I don't know. But I don't know why. You're in a perfect position. Drop. Anyway. So we talked a little bit about Molo Hall. I think
you mentioned this UFC story. He has kind of been bad-mouthing the UFC a little bit. He says Bellator makes it a true sport. I think the difference between Bellator and the UFC is that the UFC is more about the spectacle and more about flair, whereas Bellator, it really is a true sport. Every true sport has a title format. The Olympics have a title format. The NBA playoffs, the NFL playoffs, hockey, baseball, all of that. They all have a tournament format of some sort. I think that's better because when you win, you know where you're going. And Lawal believes it really has come down to the two best fighters that earn their opportunities. So it was pretty bold of him to come out there and say that. Obviously, like you said, he probably does not want to end up in the UFC.
Of course, stranger things have happened. I mean, Dana can relent. I mean, it just depends where we're at. But, I mean, I think that was kind of an ill-advised move on his part.
All right. Now, we've got to mention this story, of course, the 15 fighters. Actually, I think it's 16 because I don't see Jacob Volkman on this list. He was cut earlier this week. More controversial outside the ring than inside the ring. Volkman called out Barack Obama, so I guess
yeah.
That has something to do with this cut.
Yeah. Not a wise move. Not a wise move at all.
But it's got at least 15 fighters here that were cut, according to this one article. And the most puzzling cut is John Fitch. And obviously we saw him kind of manhandled by Damian Maia. But, I mean, look at how many times he avoided a submission in that fight. And look how hard he tried to at least compete. And it wasn't for lack of trying, I don't think. But he was one of these fighters UFC released on Wednesday. And a lot of people were outraged by it. A lot of fans were pissed off. We had heavyweight Mike Russo, who was not much of a surprise. I mean, he's not the picture-perfect heavyweight. He's got a lot of fat. He did not look good in his last fight. Neither did his opponent, really, but he lost the fight. We have light heavyweights Vladimir Matyushenko and Wagner Prado. Not much outrage there. I don't think either guy really totally deserved it, but you know, they weren't world beaters either. We mentioned John Fitch at welterweight. We also had Jay Mills, Jay Huron, Jorge Santiago, Simeon Torreson, and Mike Stumpf. All cut. Stumpf, I think, just made his debut, I think. So he was cut right away. Debut, that's fine. Lightweight, we had Volkman, Paul Sass, CJ Keith, and Terry Etim. Already mentioned Grisby at featherweight. He was cut. Motonobu Tezuka was also cut at bantamweight. And finally, at flyweight, we had Ulysses Lomax. As we mentioned, John Fitch was kind of a surprising cut because he had a 14-3-1 record in the UFC. And he was near the top of the 170-pound class for several years. He was unsuccessful in his one shot at the belt when he lost to GSP at UFC 87 in 2008. But after that, he had five straight wins before fighting to a draw with BJ Penn at UFC 127. But he fell on harder times lately. He went 1-2 over his last three fights, and the only problem with cutting him after those was the competitors that he fought against, Johnny Hendricks and Damian Maia, both very solid guys.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think Fitch is the kind of guy that really, he's kind of a lightning rod in a sense, because a lot of people that aren't big fans of what we call lay and pray felt that John Fitch epitomized that style, that grinder style, that he just couldn't seem to finish, and he was boring. And there'd be these comments on the underground about, Fitch is fighting, I'm going to go out and grab my beer, you know, I could do this, or, you know, something else during the fight. And yet, from a technical standpoint, and especially from a wrestling standpoint, a lot of people loved him. So it's kind of a strange thing, but I think there was some clamor that he was just a little just couldn't finish things, and it was a little too boring. I mean, I personally like to watch it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can see both perspectives. I can't pick a John Fitch fight that I remember that was a can't miss fight was unbelievable. But at the same time, you know, I know he's very well known for his submission defense. He's a very technical fighter. He might not be exciting, but he's good. He's very good.
Yeah.
Around based on his talent level and his experience.
Yeah, and I guess if you're gonna be a fan of Lay and Pray, you could, well, they don't really call it Lay and Pray, but I would if there's just no action at all, hardly. But I guess the counter is, well, hey, get me off you. So I don't know.
Then we had Holtman, I think, had a great fight for his last fight against Bobby Green,
mm-hmm.
but you know, he slipped up at some point, and Green came back into the fight and won. It wasn't something like a cardio problem, or you know, it was a lack of effort on Goldman's part, and he got caught. But it kind of brings to mind the question: why are they making these cuts and saying as an excuse that it's to bring in these strike force guys? And also they mentioned the Ultimate Fighter contestants from the season. Every single one of those guys from the show, I think, from what I've been hearing, is going to end up with at least one UFC fight, which is basically unheard of. So I'm kind of looking forward to how that shakes out, if that's true. But you know, if they're gonna end up making that excuse, where is it in any rule book or, you know, why would they make that policy that they have to have a certain amount of fighters?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. Yeah.
Is there a fighter cap, like a salary cap? I don't get it. In these blogs that put these stories out there, they just kind of gloss over it. Like, it's no big deal. Like, they have to make room for these guys. Why do they have to make room? Why isn't anybody writing about that? You know, what is the... is there a tax bracket they're trying to stay out of? What is the reason? I'd kind of like to get to the bottom of that myself and try to figure out, you know, why is this considered making room? You know, isn't there room for everybody if everybody's making money with this? I don't know. You know, and if they're making room, does that mean when they get a full women's division, they're going to throw out a bunch more guys? Oh, this all boggles my mind that they would use that excuse and nobody would explain. I never heard of it with any other organization having to cut people to make room for other fighters. So it's just very puzzling to me. But I want to get Tony back in the conversation here, but still MMA. This is a great headline. Smoke him if you got him. Because Ricardo Mayorga.
I thought you were going to talk pro wrestling for a minute and talk about Jack Swagger.
Now, Ricardo Mayorga, I know we've talked about this multiple times. He was supposed to make his debut before. But now, I guess it's official. There's no interference from Don King. His debut is going to be on April 27th, 2013. And he takes on a yet-to-be-announced opponent in Managua, Nicaragua. And Omega MMA Promotions is going to host the event. And it's going to be at the Nicaragua National Football Stadium. Mayorga has a 29-8-1 record in boxing with 23 knockouts over the course of his 11-year career. And he hasn't fought professionally in more than 2 years since he got beat by Miguel Cotto in March of 2011. So this will be interesting. This is his second attempt to get into MMA back in 2010. As I mentioned, Don King stopped his attempt to debut against Dean Thomas under the Shine Fights banner. But now he's fully parted ways with King, and it's 2 years later, and he's finally going to get his opportunity to pick a different sport at his advanced age. He's going to be at 155 pounds, and we know nothing about his opponent, obviously, because he hasn't been named yet. but I would think it's probably going to be a guy with limited MMA experience because they're going to want Mayorga to win.
Now, this will be interesting to see if he's just going to go in kind of one-dimensional and work on takedown defense and knock people out with his hands, or if he's really studied a few other things.
Right. Now, I know we've been hogging this episode, Tony, so feel free to bring up any boxing topics. I know that one thing we ought to talk about is Mayweather. Mayweather has signed a really big deal with CBS and
Showtime.
Whoa, Tony, speak up. Speak into the microphone.
I remember a couple people that were bitching about it, and I really was on the wall. You know, I mean, the guy got a deal. The guy's going to go make money. What's the problem?
Right.
You know, I mean, it sucks if you don't have Showtime, but, you know, I have them both, so what do I give a shit? I'll watch it on, you know, either channel.
FirstRowSports.eu, folks. If you have a computer, you can watch Showtime.
Right.
At least Showtime,
yeah, exactly. Here's the thing. It's like, you know what? If you want to watch the fighter, you watch the fighter. I really don't care what networks they're on. I mean, each network, you know, would give me something I like and then something I wouldn't like. I know I've been watching HBO Boxing, you know, since I can remember as a little kid. I always enjoyed Jim Lampley. Sometimes I would get annoyed with Larry Merchant. For the most part, I agree with Max Kellerman. You know, Emmanuel Stewart, when he was on the show, you know, before his untimely death a few months ago. He was a great analyst. Sometimes we had Roy Jones on there. George Foreman was on there. And they give you class one, you know, broadcasting. With Showtime, I like their announcers, except for Jim Gray, who's the interviewer. Never could stand him. I mean, he made Larry Merchant look, you know, non-combative sometimes. And, you know, Larry could get up in the guy's face and, you know, really throw it at him. Remember him and Bernard Hopkins battling many times. Well, Jim Gray had to be probably the rudest interview I've ever seen. That's the big detractor for me for Showtime. But aside from that, Showtime has Al Bernstein and Steve Farhood on it. They had Nick Charles until he recently passed away, who was a personal favorite of mine. But Farhood and Bernstein, I love them as an announced team. I've always liked Al Bernstein.
Agreed.
We had him on a couple of years ago, Tom, before he started doing the show with us. And, you know, just what a great show. And for me, it was cool because I remember watching the old ESPN Thursday night fights back when I was around 12, 13 years old. And it was always him and Barry Tompkins.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I told Al that the night we had him on was I enjoyed listening to him and Steve Farhood and him and Barry Tompkins just because they seemed so smooth. And,
right.
You know, they knew the sport and you knew that, but you didn't feel like you were being insulted or talked down upon when they were doing the broadcast. Sometimes that's a complaint I'd have with Larry Merchant sometimes. When he would talk there, you feel like he was almost talking down to you.
Exactly.
Sometimes Jim Lampley likes to use big words. Now I got to go and grab a thesaurus to try to understand that the guy was talking about a 1-2 combination.
Right. And I'll tell you who was worse was Howard Cosell. Like, and I often wondered if Cosell would just record the fight and then go back and add his comments, because sometimes the crowd would get excited and I still hear Cosell, "Crowd totally best lad." I mean, oh, please, come on. he was about the worst, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, interesting you mentioned the Al Bernstein, because Al, when I went out to Vegas and I got to see an open workout in Mayweather's gym, Al really warmed up to Floyd quickly. You know, Floyd was kind of always watching him across the room while Al was watching him. So it was kind of interesting, their relationship. And, you know, Floyd was yelling out to him as he was getting ready for his big one-on-one interview. And I'll never forget the press. I mean, the actual physical press go
going on of everybody trying to get around Floyd when he first showed up. And I got a great picture of, you know, the rush of the press coming in. And there's Al in the center of it with a microphone right in Floyd's face, getting ready for the interview. And, you know, they had a great rapport, so it's obviously going to be a good fit when he does start this relationship off. And, of course, we've talked about it before, but now I guess it's finally official that Floyd is fighting Robert Carrera.
Right, yeah, that was announced.
On Quattro de Mayo.
And, you know, what you're going to have is, you look at it like this. Floyd, when he fought Zab Judah back, I guess that was around 2006, I believe. Zab, for the first four rounds, really gave him trouble. You know, he was quick-handed, southpaw, and Zab was good after four rounds, but then Zab became Zab, and I always called him the quintessential front-runner, because when things got a little tough and a little tight, Zab generally, like a bully that got hit in the mouth for the first time in his life, would fold. And that's what started happening to Zab. He started, you know, withering and crumbling, and then he started pulling the low blows, which almost turned into a big riot. So, now, Guerrero is a very solid fighter. He doesn't have Zab's quickness. But he was a good fighter at 130. He is moving up. He's had some good fights with Andre Berto. That was probably his best performance out there. He was an underdog in that fight. The question is, can he put enough pressure on Mayweather? Can he use that southpaw style to land maybe some straight lefts and get around Mayweather's guard? Because Mayweather has a great defense. And I've said this probably for the past 5 or 6 years. If I'm training a fighter, a conventional fighter, I'm instructing them to jab him right at the point where the pectoral muscle meets the shoulder, right in that little covert in there, just to throw his offense off and to take maybe his jab hand out of the game, and then take some other shots and put them on his torso. Don't go for his head, and, you know, in the early rounds because he's too elusive. And if he's using the shoulder roll, you're rolling right off it. You're not hitting really anything. If he goes for the shoulder roll, aim that punch about 6 inches lower and just punch him right on the bicep. Do the old Marciano trick and just really try to rough him up physically. Now, as a southpaw, I would instruct Guerrero to go out there and fire some lead left hands. Feint, then fire. And then maybe do a double feint and then fire a hook. You know, you can't let Floyd's defense, dictate what you do out there. And then also you can't let him stay in the center of the ring. You can't let him use his legs. You know, even if you have to, you know, cut him off and corner him, and, you know, just even if you get, but don't do what De La Hoya did. If you go back to the first few rounds of the De La Hoya Mayweather fight, where De La Hoya was really using his jab, if he would get Mayweather on the ropes, he would all try to smother him. And he was getting so close to all that he had no room. He's so intent on keeping him pinned on those ropes that he smothered his own offense, and punches that, you know, could have been effective if he could get his whole body into them look like a, 2 12-year-olds in a fight, you know, holding each other and punching real fast with one hand. So right now, when I put everything into the little computer in here, I'm predicting Mayweather by decision. But he could stop him. Right now, I don't see Guerrero winning the fight, but you never know. If he comes out there and he's able to lay his hands and back Mayweather up and get him off his game, you never know. It's just he's not a big puncher, and he's really going to have to out-slick Mayweather. He's going to have to out-counter the counter.
Yeah, that's very difficult to do.
Yeah, he's going to have to out-counter the counter puncher. And, yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah, I don't see it.
The other thing, too, is Guerrero in his last fight against Berto, he got so overconfident because of his early success, he started to slip up in the later rounds, and he ended up with a really nasty black eye. So, I mean, a guy like Mayweather, if you have any success against him, it's going to make you overconfident. So he's going to have to really watch out for that if he does well in the early rounds to not let it slide. Because, this fight's going to be in Vegas, obviously, so... If it goes to points, it's going to be favored to Mayweather.
Of course.
It's going to be like hometown cooking for him. So if you're going to have success in the early rounds, you're going to want to finish him by the late rounds. You don't want to end up slipping into a trap and lose on points because you start falling apart after the fifth or sixth round or something. So I'm rooting for Guerrero, but I just think... Mayweather's had so much time now to get back on his game and just sign this deal. He's got so much going for him. And he hasn't lost, so it's hard, always hard to pick against an undefeated fighter. But, the ring rust also could be a factor. You never know.
So it's funny that you look at it this way. With an undefeated record, now let's go to a fight that happened last week. I did not get to see it, but there were a couple fights last week where with fighters with impressive records did not put together impressive performances. The first one was the Friday night fight, which was on 2/15. I didn't get to see this, but I actually listened to my transcript from it. I almost predicted it. It was a fight with Delvin Rodriguez and that George with a real long last name that I couldn't pronounce. And
right,
I said if he came out and won the fight, we'd be able to pronounce his name, Papadunia something or other. And I said, he was 31-0, but all the fights were in Oklahoma. The one guy a couple fights ago, five fights ago, he had a guy in his pro debut. He's, 27 fights. This guy's in his pro debut. And he beat him by decision. And it was like, you could tell he wasn't fighting a lot of quality opponents out there. He gets in there with Delvin Rodriguez, who is a world-class fighter. Delvin Rodriguez, ESPN. He's fought the guys like Austin Trout. He's fought the guys... Powell Wolak, and he's been in there with some good guys. Well, what happened? It became a mismatch, and Rodriguez battered him, stopped him in six rounds. Now let's go to back to Saturday night. Now earlier I talked about the main event fight with Adrian Broner stopping Gavin Reeves, but let's talk about the fight that was on the undercard of that, which was another one that I said it was a possibility of a guy with a competitive record stepping in way above his weight class. Way above his skill level and way above his, his level of opposition. Here we go. We have the man Adrian Broner wins. Then we had Saki Obika against a guy named Nikola Sokovia, and he was 25-0, seven knockouts, but had never fought outside of his home area, Montenegro. He's a Slovakian fighter. Never fought out of the Eastern European area. Had a lot of amateur fights. But now he steps up, and he's fighting a guy that was a world title challenger. Guys that had only lost to names like Andre Ward, Carl Brock, Yusha Mushabuse. So Beek is fighting all world-class opposition, and he dominates Sokovia.
Because of the UFC debacle there being so early in the day, I actually watched some of that fight, and Beek.
Yeah. And the fight was a mismatch. I thought Beaker could have stopped him, But after around the seventh round, he kind of just, pulled off the gas pedal a little bit. But there was two instances right there where you had fighters that, had pristine records, but unfortunately did not fight pristine opposition. And when they stepped up in competition, it got shown. I remember going to a fight a couple of years ago, and the main event was over, and I was kind of talking to a fighter that I knew pretty well, Willie the Gladiator Gibbs, who was a USBA middleweight champ, and Willie and I had been friends for a number of years. So I was talking to him, and they had a walk-up fight, a heavyweight. And one guy, he was 34-0 with, 32 knockouts, and he fought no opposition. I mean, he had fought like nobody. And they bring in the guy for him to fight, he was a heavyweight. The guy they brought in was about 6'8". As you could tell, he was an unskilled fighter for as big as he was, And you knew this other fighter, whose name's escaping me right now, it was going to end quickly. So I'm talking to Willie. And Willie goes, Tone, don't you have to cover this fight? I said, Willie, I already did. And I showed him my notepad, which had one word on it, that word being timber. And 30 seconds into the first round, you hear, bang, ooh, thud. 10 seconds later, the fight was over.
Nice.
And I will say about the main event and the Friday night fights, that George showed all the courage in the world. I mean, after the second round, it looked, and I'll congratulate the officials and the staff, because apparently the referee thought he heard that they were going to stop it, that his corner wanted to stop it, so he waved it off, but then the corner said, no, we didn't say that. It was kind of a mixed-up mess, but they let the fight go on. But for George, he just could never. He was just a day late and a dollar short. And there was one part of me that was hoping, well, let's see if the guy can hang on and make a fight out of it. Even though I'm a big fan of Delvin Rodriguez, I mean, if you like boxing, you got to like this guy. I mean, he brings it. But it was just a one-sided mismatch, and fortunately, it was stopped.
Yeah.
I believe the sixth round, wasn't it, Tony? The sixth round.
It was the sixth round, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And there was no, you couldn't argue the stoppage. And Georgia was very gracious in defeat, but I guess maybe this might be a worse beating than if he'd have been knocked out after the first or second round. Because after going through so many guys and he wanted to see where he's at, and I don't know what direction he's going to go in from here. I mean, he can't go back in the circuit back where he's from. Obviously, that ain't working. But then if he jumps up too much, that didn't work either. So hard to say, but I do think he really showed all the heart in the world. I couldn't help but kind of get behind him a bit, you know. So
it's definitely a good weekend of boxing all around. We got another good weekend coming up. Cornelius Bundrich of the Contender fame is back in action. Fighting Ishae Smith on a big card. And it's for the IBF Junior Middleweight World title. And also, Jaleon Love is an unbeaten fighter fighting against Derek Superman Findlay on Showtime. And this is going to be a big deal for Golden Boy Promotions and Mayweather Promotions. And they're going to have a packed undercard. I think the weigh-in is tomorrow night, and actually Floyd is in Michigan for this one. It's his home state, so he's out there and already promoting. He's going to be at the weigh-in tomorrow. But they have a lot of big names on the undercard as well. Badu Jack, Luis Arias, Terrell Gaucha, Steve Geffrard, Demetrius Ballard, and Detroit Zone Joseph Bonas. So that should be a good card all around. Bundrich versus Smith is a 12-round fight for the IBF Junior Middleweight World Championship. And it's going to be at the Masonic Temple Theater in Detroit, Michigan. Kicks off at 9 o'clock as far as the televised fights. It's going to be delayed on the West Coast, but that's a Showtime deal. everybody about his big deal with Showtime. 30 months straight, he's going to fight on the Showtime network. I didn't hear any actual number figures behind it, but that is going to be multi-millions. Go ahead.
We've got another interesting fight tomorrow night. I believe this is the one between the ESPN between Lamont Peterson and Kendall Holt.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
And, yeah, Peterson coming off his win over a year ago, Amir Khan. He played even one. His only one was Timothy Bradley, who, coincidentally, will be fighting pretty soon. He's fighting Kendall Holt, 28-5. 60 knockouts, and 5 losses have been by stoppage. His last major fight was October 2011, a split decision loss to Danny Garcia. He's only fought one since. That was about a year ago, which was a 2-round knockout over Tim Pitbull Coleman. So now you're getting his left fighter has been very inactive. Basically, in the you know, and how that works out. Peterson, then again, hasn't been the most active guy himself yet. We got one fight, I believe it's tonight or tomorrow night. It's over in Romania. I think it's 10 p.m. Romanian time, that could be tomorrow night, which will make it 3 p.m. like U.S. time. Let me confirm that. So that's with a gentleman that I know, Garrett Ultimate Warrior Wilson out of Philadelphia, cruiserweight. This is for tomorrow. So it's going to be at 10 p.m. tomorrow night Romanian time, 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon Eastern time. Now, Garrett doesn't have a great record. He's 13-5, 1 draw, 7 knockouts. But here's the thing, and it always reminds me of a guy that I was a teammate with at Lock Haven that I kind of mentored, a kid by the name of Comanche Garcia. Comanche came to Lock Haven out of the Marine Corps, and he was a short, compact guy. You know, he fought mostly at welterweight, and he was only about 5'4". You know, thick arms, thick chest. But the problem was he had no reach, he had no height, and when I was training with him, I was teaching him how to see punches, catch punches, slip punches, and get inside. And for his freshman year, he couldn't do it. He was 0-4. And he just couldn't do it. I think the rest of his college career in 3 years, I think he lost 2 fights. And he won 2 national titles once he learned how to do it. Garrett Wilson is kind of the same way. Garrett Wilson, for a cruiserweight, is only 5'9", and he doesn't even look like he's 5'9". But he and I are, you know, on the same height. But he's power. He looks almost. I'm trying to describe, you know, where you're thinking. He's built almost like a Mike Tyson, you know, in his prime. You know, the real thick chest and the thick looking biceps. You know, a powerfully built athlete. But early in his career, he lost 3 of his first 5 fights. And then he lost 3 in a row, one of them by stoppage to Omar Sheikh, who was a former world title challenger. But then something clicked. And you can take a look at early in his career, he fought a guy by the name of Rashawn Scott. He beat him by majority decision, only by 2 points on 2 of the cards. They fought again a couple years later, and he knocked him out in 1 round. He had fought with Omar Sheikh back in 2010. He lost by stoppage. They fought again. Like a year later, he beat Sheikh, and he beat him convincingly. He lost on 3 judges' cards. He lost a total of 3 rounds. He had a guy like Aaron Williams, who was 20-2, knocked him out. He fought my good friend Chuck Masaccio, and they were dead even going into the 12th, and he caught Chuck with a right hand and stopped him. He had a fight with a guy named Andres Taylor a couple years ago. Raw knocked him out the last time. So he's a guy that's definitely picking up his groove. Now, he's going over to Romania to fight a guy by the name of Alexander Alexeev. Now, he's got a pretty good record. He's 23-2, one draw. He's got 20 knockouts. His two losses are via stoppage. Now, looking at him, he has never fought outside of. He's fought every one of his fights in Germany. So now, okay, he's fighting a lot in Germany. Now he's fighting in Romania, he's originally from Uzbekistan, so why they're fighting Romania, I'm not sure. But his losses, okay, he had a stoppage loss to a guy, Victor Emilio Ramirez, who I don't know much about. That was for the WBA Cruiserweight title. And then he had a, this one's an exchange law, a stoppage loss to Dennis Lebedev, who owns a knockout over Roy Jones. So, you know, he's fought some good fighters. But the two best fighters he's fought, he's lost. Now you got Garrett going over there to challenge him, and it's gonna be a tough uphill challenge for him. But the fact is that he has improved so much over the last 3 years, but there's a good chance that he's gonna come home with this win and win a good shot at the IBF Cruiserweight title.
Nice. Well, we also have some Friday night fights on Showtime. Huge fight here, but I like the co-main event of this one better than the main event. Main event is going to be super featherweight. Art Hovannis. I'm probably not pronouncing that right, but Hovannisyan. It's a tough one. That's probably going to give anybody trouble who doesn't already know how to pronounce it. But he's fighting Alejandro Perez. Perez is 16-3-1 with 11 knockouts. I don't see Hovannisyan's record here, but the co-main event is a couple guys who are undefeated, so somebody's O has got to go, and it's got to be between Toriano Reno Johnson, who's 13-0 with 10 knockouts. He represented the Bahamas in the 2008 Olympic Games, and he's going to be facing Willie Fortune, who's 15-0 with 77 KOs. He's from Detroit, Michigan. And that's going to be a middleweight fight. So that's on Showbox. So you got the double whammy this weekend on Showtime. Saturday and Friday fights to watch. So check that out.
Saturday night on NBC Sports. So, we have two fight cards on Saturday that I just want to quickly discuss. The first one is going to be on NBC Sports. And it's going to start, I think it's starting a little bit late, around 10 o'clock. But I will stay up to watch it. Main event is also somebody who's coming from the Paramount Theater in Huntington, New York. Somebody else's O has to go. This is with Malik Scott. Did you talk about that one, Rich?
Nope.
Okay, we've got Malik Scott. He's fighting a guy another name that I'm going to butcher. Vaclav Glasnov. Now, Malik Scott is 35-0, 12 knockouts. I'm looking at his record in a few years, looking at some of the guys he's fought. He's fought a lot of, the guys that, you're expected to beat, when you're stepping up the rank. The guys like Kendrick Relliford, the David Bosses, the Louis Malacos, Cedric Fields, Raphael Butlers. Not a big puncher, 35-0 with only 12 knockouts. But he's 6'4", he weighed about 225. He's been as high as 255, and he's been getting his weight down. Now, Glasgow, who I haven't heard. I did see Glasgow fight. I saw him fight the card that Steve Cunningham got robbed on a few months ago. Fought a kid by the name of Corey Hamer and stopped him in four rounds. Glasgow was 14-0, 10 knockouts, had been winning over Hamer. Other than that, he had fought strictly over in Russia or Ukraine, with one fight in the Dominican Republic, of all places. And he did have a fight in Philadelphia, but I somehow, I was on vacation 8 years ago, I missed his card, but he beat another friend of mine, Bobby Brown, a third round TKO. Oak Tree, big, strong guy, very gregarious. Not the best boxer in the world. So, Black Hawk is a rising prospect, but he's going to get tested in here. I haven't really seen any names on his record that would suggest that he's been tested yet. Also on that card, let me see, there was another woman I wanted to mention, if I can get it pulled up real quick. Okay, for Saturday on that card here. Okay, Chris Algieri versus Jose Peralta Alejo, 10-round fight. I'm calling my dog to get out of Philadelphia. But the Algieri fight, he had 15-0, 7 knockouts. He's fighting Alejo, who is 10-1 with 6 knockouts. Either an O versus a 1. Either one's going to have a 2 or both are going to have a 1. And then also, a part that I was invited to that I'm not able to make, down at Bally's Atlantic City, my Masachi is on the card. I saw him a few weeks ago. Chuck is 18-2, 2 draws. His last fight was down in New Jersey, a unanimous decision over the Bally. He's fighting a guy by the name of Lionel Thompson. He's 12-2. 8 knockouts. He's lost the last 2 fights. He's 12-0. He lost a split decision to a guy by the name of Nicholson Pauliard in Canada. And then a few months ago, he got stopped in Bethlehem by Sergey Kovalev. Third round stoppage. I remember watching that fight. Kovalev was a real deal. He was 18-1 at the time. And since that knockout, he went on to absolutely destroy Gabriel Capiello on MMA. This is going to be a tough fight for Chucky. And we got to see how much he really has left. He's in his 30s now. Main event that night is a guy by the name of Patrick Mahuski. He is 20-1, 13 knockouts. He's only lost for the stoppage. He's stepping up to fight a guy by the name of Jamal the Truth Davis. And Jamal's a funny kid. I don't know him personally, but I know people that know him. He's 14-8, 1 draw. He's got 6 knockouts. He actually, in one of his biggest fights, he fought Gabriel Rosado pretty nip-tuck on the 12th round when Rosado stopped him. Two and one since that fight a couple of years ago. The one thing about Jamal Davis and a lot of people really have come to respect him for was he lost his wife a couple of years ago to breast cancer. So he often fights to promote breast cancer awareness and research. He wears pink gloves in the ring very frequently, not all the time, but he frequently wears pink gloves in the ring or pink trunks. In honor of his departed wife.
Well, it's always good to have a little angle there and a positive note, supporting something. Guerrero's another one of those guys who fights for cancer research, and I just had an article on my website for blood drive, bone marrow drive, actually, that he's been supportive of. So it's always good to see these fighters using their image and their name to further a good cause. We don't have a guest tonight, so I was thinking I might as well debut the Luke Barnett interview that I did behalf of MMA Ultimate MMA Magazine, which hopefully will be published very soon here. I know that they just sent me a final email trying to get the credits for the photography. But don't know exactly when the issue comes out. I will find out. You guys have anything left before we play that and end the show a little early?
No, I don't, Rich. I listen, let me ask you a question. The other day, I had sent an email to Ken Cooper. I copied you on it. When he responded to me, and he copied somebody else. So when I responded back to that, I copied you on it, and I hadn't heard from anybody since. So I didn't know if you got that or if it didn't go through.
I think I got it.
Okay. Yeah, because obviously I asked if they wanted to get somebody on the show, and nobody responded on that. But the guy who Coop originally emailed that copied me, when I responded to that and then added you to it, his kicked back to me, and I was like, oh, shit, is his email wrong? And I was like, I don't know. So I'm going to wait a day. I'm going to wait until I come back from vacation because I leave in a few days. And then from there I'll,
yeah, I'm pretty sure we had Cooper on a while back.
You couldn't have. Unless it was before I was on the show.
No. I just remember, for some reason, we had him on at some point.
No, I definitely remember that because he was one of my old coaches.
Oh, maybe not. I don't know.
I think you would remember talking to a guy that coached me in college and how much of a knucklehead I was.
I'll have to definitely pick his brain about if he remembers my demolition of the guy that demolished me. one fight.
I know he's so busy because he has a full-time job working at Rocky State Penitentiary. He's kind of like the director of athletics there. You know, he runs the boxing program there. But then, you know, he was 200 tons an hour in the 20s. But then, you know, he's president of the NCBA. And so, you
got the big brigade championships coming up, too. And
yeah, I'm going to go to that.
They actually saw an article about that this morning. They got a couple of football players from Annapolis fighting each other on that.
Hey, did you put it on the blog roll?
I don't think I did, but...
anything from the NCAA?
Boxing? So I bet you if you went on boxrec.com, I think that's what they use for their links, so it's probably on their list.
What I'm going to do is anytime, if Coop sends me any press releases or anything, I'm going to, you know, send them to you to get on our website. They want to get as much publicity for this as they can. You need help, sell tickets to keep everything generating. Talking to Coop the other week, he actually messaged me when we were still on the air, and then I called him as soon as he got off, and then he and I talked for about 20 or so minutes. And he was asking me, do you still do your show? I'm like, yeah, I just literally got it off a couple minutes ago. And we discussed other things. I told him, like, hey, anything I can help you, like marketing or anything like that, let me know. I said, anything you send me, I'll make sure it gets on the website. If he was asking how many, how many people do we reach? And I said, you know, sometimes our show, because it's a podcast, you know, we'll get like 500 to 1,000 downloads in a week. But our actual site, especially if a big fight's coming up, because you know when a big fight's coming up, more people will go on to boxing or MMA websites, you know, they'll click on an article. They might see one article that they're looking for about Mayweather and Guerrero. Well, they'll, hey, let me look at this thing about college boxing. What the hell? And, you know, I said, but sometimes we've got up to 50,000 hits a day. It can't hurt. You know, we're international, so.
Well, it's probably better now because I get the Twitter page and the Facebook page with all those connected in. The new platform kind of took a while to take off, but it's getting there. It's getting up there now. So it's tougher to track the hits, though. That's the only thing that sucks about it, because it's being forwarded to a blogger site. So FightNewsUnlimited.com has the blog now of all the new stuff, but UnlimitedFightNews.com is the actual website. So it's still getting way more hits overall that can be tracked, but blogger doesn't really track that well, so it's tougher to figure out what I'm getting where.
Right.
But I'm definitely.
I mean, I told you.
Definitely getting a lot of the
there. Anything we can like do to, you know, help get, you know, info out there, I said we'll do. He was appreciative of that, but I said I would love to get him on the show because like the man will crack you up. I remember like even as my coach. He got pressing the referee in one of my fights one time. And that was even funny because I got two standing eight counts on my opponent in the first round. I got one eight count, and another time I actually knocked him down. So we got the eight counts. And then, you know, we're nip and tuck back and forth. I'm bleeding, he's bleeding, we're kicking each other's ass. But finally, in the third round, he kept me with the right hand, and they give me an eight count. And normally, they say, if you get a count, they say, walk forward. Well, first of all, Clifford looks at me, and everyone's looking at me saying, where are you? And I'm like, oh, shit. I thought we had kids in school, but I called on my teacher and didn't know the answer. I'm like, oh, shit, where the hell am I? And then I remember, and I shouted it in his face. And then he goes, instead of walking forward, because I've always practiced the walking back into my dorm when I was drunk walk, and, you know, he goes, walk, step to your right. And I'm like, oh, shit, I don't know how to do that. But we always laugh about the me fighting the five weight classes in the 3 month span. I asked him the other year, I was like, am I still the only guy to have ever done that? And he goes, yeah, you're the only one stupid enough to ever try it. He said, you were one of my favorites. He's like, because I loved working with you because it was, Tony, we got you a fight this weekend. Okay, we need you to get down to 172. Okay. You're fighting a 3-time national champion from Navy. Okay. I'll be there. I'll be ready. And it was like, no complaints about it. Oh, we had other guys on the team. Oh, I got to fight so-and-so. Well, I don't want to fight him. Or he's sick of the day. But I had one guy on the team back out of a fight because his knee was bothering him. They put me in after I was coming off knee surgery. But we always have good laughs about that. And then he has a lot of great stories. I would love to get him on. Maybe I'm gonna be back in email contact with him probably right when I get back from Florida. So I'll see if I can talk him into it.
Cool. Yeah, we don't have anybody booked for quite a while here, so. And I haven't really gotten any emails from anybody promising, looking for an interview for somebody. But one name that I do want to get from MMA is Frank Shamrock. I do have his agent's contact, and she owes me an interview with him. So
yeah, that would be fascinating. Yeah.
And they got their new Bellator reality series to promote, so it's a good excuse.
Did we have Frank last year, or is he the one that we tried to get and we couldn't get him on?
We've had Frank, I've interviewed him at least once in person by myself back in the old days. And then we had him on 2 times since then. So I think one of them was a written interview, and then the other two were radio shows, but they were probably on 2 different formats. So, yeah, we definitely had him on before, but it was a while ago. It's at least been 2 years since the last time.
Okay.
And he had his one of his final opponents on, Kung Lee.
I remember that. I remember Kung Lee because everything was either yes or no.
Yeah, that was bad. The second take was better than the first one, of course.
Yeah. It's like, so how do you feel about your upcoming opponent? He's good.
Like he just separated. Oh, it was rough.
What was the greatest fight of your life? Oh, Frank Shamrock. And why was that? I beat him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether it was an English barrier or what then, but I think he was born. He came over here when he was a kid, so he shouldn't have an English problem. But.
Well, you get a guy like Roberto Duran and still has a mastered English.
I know. I couldn't believe that. Looked like when I was talking to him, he was looking at me like I was speaking Chinese.
Well, you know the one thing about Roberto. I mean, I've always liked and respected him, you know, since you. Well, first, for the longest time as a kid, I didn't like Roberto Duran because when I was first a little kid, because he was fighting guys that I really liked, like either Sugar Ray Leonard or Marvin Hagler. And then later, you know, he fought about like Manny Pacquiao, who I was a big fan of, and there was a lot of trash talking in that. But then he comes out, and from a guy that was so vicious and so nasty, especially as a lightweight, you know, I remember he knocked out the one fighter, his name's escaping me right now, Jeff Lampkin. And he's like, if I was in shape, he'd be in the morgue right now. And
he was so vicious and so nasty, so mean.
And then you see him later, and I remember him being at Vinny Paz's last fight back in 2004. And, you know, he's obviously a lot heavier looking, about like 250 pounds at the time. And he's smiling and cheering and laughing. And I'm like, he is not the Roberto Duran I remember. You know, that was just, like, sneering and nasty and all that. Like, and I guess it's true that, you know, sometimes age softens you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there's so many fighters that have proven that wrong sometimes, so it all depends. It all depends on how much TRT you're on, I guess.
Yeah.
Lately. But that was another thing we didn't really discuss, but I did read about this week, as far as the UFC anyway. And obviously we didn't discuss it with Kendall Holt and Peterson fighting, but Peterson just got nabbed on it. He was one of the boxers that got caught doing the testosterone a little too heavy. But, you know, he's a good fighter. I actually saw the eliminator for him before he fought Amir Khan, so I was able to watch him live in person for the first time out in Vegas. And, you know, I didn't think he looked any differently, but if he was doing testosterone then, I don't know. But anyway, Dana White mentioned this week that his take has changed on that whole picture of, you know, whether guys are using that responsibly, the testosterone replacement therapy. And now he's promised to have rigorous testing of all the fighters who are approved for TRT use. And when I was preparing to do the Ultimate Fighter story, I wanted to interview Chael Sonnen. And one of the questions I was going to ask him was, is he still doing the TRT even though he's not cutting weight? And I got my answer before I even was able to interview him, because there was an article the other day saying that he's already been tested under that new protocol. So he's using it. But he's still a little bit more mild-mannered than we're used to seeing him in the Ultimate Fighter show there. But anyway, my point was that Dana's going to start testing these guys, so he's convinced that a lot of people are using it as an unfair advantage. You know, if you get the approval to go through with it, you only have to test normally like a week or so before the fight, or, you know, however many days leading up to the fight that it's mandatory in whatever state you're in. And the UFC has never done random testing independently of the athletic commissions to make sure the guys aren't jacking up their levels just to train harder and then weaning off of it before the fight. So hopefully this works, and guys won't just do it because this will give them an advantage. They'll do it because they actually need it, and they'll use it responsibly. We'll see. I still think either way, you know, if you can get a doctor to say that you have whatever condition and you get approved, you know, and you're going against a guy who's never had that advantage, it's kind of kind of still cheating in my eyes, but it is what it is. I'll deal with it. Anyway, like I said, if you guys don't have anything else, we're going to do the Luke Barnett interview, and I do want to apologize ahead of time because for whatever reason, I think he was either in the UK or on a bad line, because there's some really loud clicking at certain points, and it's doesn't really affect, you know, being able to hear what he says, but it's kind of annoying, so sorry for that, but just got to deal with it. But it is a good interview. and you find out one thing about Luke that you'll never find out on the show or anywhere else, so it's worth listening to. And, Tom, you don't have to stay on because we're not going into overtime, but if you want to stay on and listen, go ahead.
Okay, sounds like a plan.
I'm signing off. Like I said, if you guys have any tidbits, now's the time. Anything?
I'll be on my email pretty frequently until Saturday, and then my email will be very infrequently used until I get back home Wednesday.
Okay, well, have fun in Florida.
I'm going to try. Hopefully the weather's nice.
At the beach.
Well, either way, I'm going to be drunk, so. And then drunk in the sun and drunk in the rain.
Yeah.
Well, till next week, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's a tornado and I'm out.
All right, bud. Have a good trip.
Thanks, man. See you later.
All right. So we're going to go right to the Luke Barnett interview here. And until next week, we're signing off and have a good weekend. And
let's enjoy the UFC and the boxing, all of it. Enjoy the fights.
Yep.
Getting right to the questions. What did you enjoy most about your experience on the Ultimate Fighter show?
tell us about your own fighting style, and did the show help you improve your
game?